Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. South Africa today all but reversed itself on the issue of Namibia. The announcement followed 3 days of talks between South African government leaders and senior diplomats from five Western nations. Robin Wright reports from Pretoria.
At a press conference this morning, South African Prime Minister P.W. Botha outlined a three-point plan in response to the five Western governments' peace proposals for Namibia, or Southwest Africa. The main issue has been the disputed election. South Africa had scheduled an election for December, while the UN wanted a delay of 7 months. Botha said this morning that the South Africans would go ahead with their election. However, he added that the South African government would then urge the Namibians to accept the UN plan and go ahead with the second election, perhaps in June. The South Africans have also requested that the UN send out its representative for further talks on the issue of UN peacekeeping troops. However, Botha made it clear that the final implementation of the UN plan would depend on whether a ceasefire could be achieved in the 12-year-old guerrilla war. In effect, today's decision indicates hope for, but not final agreement on, a settlement. It may be more important for the South Africans, for the decision is likely to stop the UN from voting on sanctions against South Africa, scheduled for October 23rd. Robin Wright, CBS News, Pretoria.
Secretary of State Vance today flew from Pretoria to Geneva. He's meeting there with U.S. officials who are negotiating a new agreement with Soviet Russia on limitation of strategic arms. Vance and the others fly to Moscow on Saturday for talks in which final work on that agreement is expected. Egyptian and Israeli negotiators in Washington today commenced their second week of talks on a peace treaty. They're still reportedly making good progress, but CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb sees signs that the job may take longer than some people had expected.
The Israeli and Egyptian officials who thought the peace treaty could be wrapped up by this weekend now say next week is more realistic, but they all remain optimistic it can and will be done. There are two major problems now. First, how to link the Sinai Treaty with the broader issue of trying to solve the Palestinian dilemma on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. The U.S. wanted to include a joint commitment to this end in the preamble to the peace treaty. And reportedly, the U.S. promised Jordan that these disputed territories would be returned to Arab sovereignty after 5 years. The Israelis say they never agreed to that, and the Americans know it. The second problem relates to the degree of normal relations Egypt will give Israel in exchange for Israel's phased withdrawal from the Sinai. The negotiations continue this morning with all sides expecting progress on both these problems. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
The United Nations Security Council today begins the process of extending the stay of the UN force in Sinai, and we'll hear about that from CBS News UN correspondent Richard C. Hotelet.
Secretary General Waldheim recommends that the 4,000-man force be kept in place between the Egyptian and the Israeli armies for another year. That more than covers the period in which the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty is to be completed and Israeli troops withdrawn to the eastern Sinai. If the peace negotiations should bog down, the men of UNEF would be needed all the more to man the buffer zone that has kept the Sinai sector so quiet since the October War of 1973. But the treaty, when concluded, will itself provide for United Nations forces to be stationed in the Sinai, west of the Egyptian-Israeli border, in the sensitive area of Sharm el-Sheikh, and along a stretch of the Mediterranean coast. UNEF's mission would remain essentially the same, to be a neutral, reassuring presence. Both Israel and Egypt want it kept in its job. Soviet quarters have grumbled about the way UNEF fits into the Camp David arrangements, which Moscow opposes. But the Russians do not pay much of their share for UNEF and are not expected to block it. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
Beirut this morning remains generally quiet, and the radio station that speaks for at least some of the Christian militia units says that 10,000 of the 26,000 Syrian troops now in Lebanon will be withdrawn in a move to take the bite, if not the bark, out of the hostility between those opposing groups. There's no confirmation of that report, but Bob McNamara tells us that some Syrian soldiers are being pulled back.
Little by little, and mostly under cover of darkness, Syrian troops are packing up and making a limited withdrawal from strategic positions around the Christian enclave of Ashrafia. The Syrians are being replaced, however, by Saudi Arabian and Sudanese troops of the Arab Peacekeeping Army. And this is the first phase of a joint Lebanese-Arab security plan to reduce tension and make the current ceasefire hold up. In Ashrafia this morning, we could hear more sniping, mostly by Christian militiamen. en route to the enclave from Muslim West Beirut, we were turned back on several approach roads where snipers had killed two civilians, a man and a woman, early this morning. Water is still scarce in Ashrafia. Children carry plastic containers to a garden hose at one street corner, and the water is carried away either by hand or transported in wheelbarrows. There's no electricity, and food remains in short supply. Ambulances still race through the streets, and at one bomb site, people were still looking for a man believed to be trapped under the rubble of an apartment building. Bob McNamara, CBS News, Beirut.
The White House announced yesterday that President Carter has ordered the production and storing of some essential elements of the neutron weapon, but he's reserving judgment on whether to have the nuclear devices assembled or send them to Western Europe as a defense against tank forces of the Warsaw Pact. CBS News White House correspondent Bob Schieffer reports it has been learned that the administration is considering the feasibility of placing some of the next generation of heavy nuclear missiles beneath the sea on huge barge-like submarines instead of in missile silos on land. A Republican study group today accuses the administration of conceding manifest military supremacy to the Soviet Union through a policy of unilateral arms reduction. A nationwide postal strike continues today in Canada, and Ed Anderst of News Radio Ottawa reports that the walkout is now being conducted in defiance of the Canadian Parliament.
The country's mail sorters have been without a contract since June 1977. They began staging a legal walkout yesterday, but Parliament issued a back-to-work order, which provides for a fine of $100 a day for each postal worker who breaks the law, and even stiffer fines for the union executive. Despite the heavy fines, the president of the Postal Workers Union, Jean-Claude Perrault, announced what everyone was expecting.
Instead of negotiating a new collective agreement, the government has decided to take away our right to strike the first day we have started to exercise it. There is no Canadian in this country that will accept to be treated this way.
The federal cabinet is to meet this morning to decide on action to overcome the walkout. Ed Anderst for CBS News, Ottawa.
Some postal employees have gone back to work in smaller towns around Canada, but mail service remains paralyzed in the large cities. Rhodesian troops staging new raids on guerrilla bases in Zambia today struck at guerrilla leader Joshua Nkomo's headquarters 12 miles from the capital, Lusaka. That's about 60 miles beyond the frontier, the deepest penetration yet of Zambia by the Rhodesians. War planes took part in the attack. The Rhodesian military command, as usual, gives no details except to say that the troops are now returning to their bases. For the New York Stock Exchange, this is the fourth day of a nervous, unsettling week. Since Monday morning, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has fallen almost 37.5 points, and Wall Street is waiting anxiously to see what the Dow does this morning. But CBS News business correspondent Ray Brady reports that Wall Street will also spend much of the day waiting for the close of trading.
That's when the Federal Reserve will release its latest figures on the size of the nation's money supply, and it's been the size of that money supply that has driven down the stock market all this week. Too much money around creates inflation, so the Federal Reserve has been tightening up on the supply and pushing up interest rates, trying to cool off inflation. But Wall Street cannot shake off its fears the Fed might go too far and bring on a major business slowdown. That fear yesterday drove down the Dow Jones Industrial Average again. There are just 30 stocks in that average, so it does not represent the entire market. But for every stock on the New York Stock Exchange that was up in price, there were more than four stocks down in price, and that's a sign of broad weakness. So many Wall Streeters, seeing that, kept selling stocks and worrying about how much higher interest rates are likely to go. Ray Brady, CBS News, New York.
The U.S. dollar rose for a change today in Tokyo, closing at 183 yen, up from yesterday's record low. The dollar also improved a bit in Western Europe, while the price of gold dropped 75 cents an ounce in Zurich. The price of gold was unchanged in London, $227.75 an ounce.